Chasing it down every day. Live, local, on it. Curtis and Cosby.
Curtis Sliwa.
Rita Cosby.
Curtis
Cosby.
77 WABC.
It is 1:39 here on 77 WABC. And our guest with us in studio, not only is he handsome and dapper and fun, he is also an accomplished actor, also a producer, and he has been in so many great movies. And it doesn't hurt that your last name is Stone, because he's got some very good genes. Oliver Stone is his dad, and Sean Stone has been in so many amazing movies, and The Doors, JFK, Natural Born Killers, Wall Street, so many of them, and now he's got his own awesome new film. It's his second one that he's produced that has come out. It is coming out in May, and it is so funny. When I looked at it, and Sean, you were telling me all about it, you're like, oh, I got this new film. I looked at it. It is hilarious. It's a great satire. It's called The Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece. Take a listen, everyone.
And the man with the plan is the Fist.
Sometimes the man's gotta stand up.
He's opening a can of whoop-ass against the plague of unconsciousness.
I need martial artists who can think.
And injustice.
Show me the fist!
And that is a very, very funny, clever trailer. And it is hilarious. You see Sean with the like cobra and, you know, scarf on and the tight pants and the whole deal.
It's Jean-Claude Van Damme's jacket, the gold fleece jacket.
Oh, is it the actual one?
Don't tell him that.
You got a couple of high kicks in there.
Bianca is his daughter. Is my co-star in it.
You got some very, we won't tell him because he will whoop your butt, by the way, if he finds that out. But you do some whooping in the movie, and we're so glad that you're here with Curtis and Cosby in the studio. Sean, great to have you here, Sean Stone.
Thank you, guys.
How did you come up with this idea, first of all? You know what I love? Curtis and I have talked about this. Movies, I think, in many ways, I mean, they make you think, they're provocative. You've certainly done a lot of movies and been a part of so many movies like that. This one is just outright fun, and it's satirical. And I think in such a crazy time right now where we're dealing with so many things in the world, it's fun to have something that just makes you laugh.
That's the point, right? I mean, actually, we should have got Curtis in the movie. I wanted him in there. I mean, we got enough of the guys like that. You know, we got the Don Fries and the Chuck Zito and, you know,
yeah,
tough guys. So you would have been good
Chuck Zito knocked out Claude Van Damme in a nightclub. Chuck Zito, very tough dude. Very tough dude.
But that's the kind of style, the flavor of it was having lived in New York and, you know, loving New York is my second home. L.A. is my first home. New York's my second home, I would say, although I'm a Mets fan. So really, it's like New York is my city. And so I would have these experiences out here, and you get a real authenticity of culture and life, and you get these organizations and groups and stuff. So your life is in the streets in New York. And I wanted to pay homage to that in a way through setting the story in the 80s, because back in the 70s and 80s, you had more organizations like the Guardian Angels and others. You had the Panthers. You had so many different movements that were taking place, right? And the film uses an homage, pays homage to all those different groups, including the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell.
Yeah, how
you guys might remember from the 70s.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you, like, what kind of research did you do, especially being a New Yorker, you know, as we both are, what kind of research did you do, and what made you say, God, I want to go back to that, like, wild period in New York? You know, I love that.
I'm a historian, right? So I just listen to the stories and the people I know, and I know guys who are still political organizers out there on the streets, you know, since the 70s, and they're throwbacks to that age, and so I would listen to the stories, and I'd be like, you know, it's just amazing. It's funny and it's fresh and it's different. Like, you know, life was in the streets, as I said, and basically this is the age of before guns, right? We have this gun debate. We just avoid it. We say, look, you know, this guy's using his fists. It's fisticuffs action. And even when they are guns, it's completely slapstick and humorous. We're not trying to take it there. And the 70s movies were like that, right? I mean, it was ridiculous. Bruce Lee is fighting 100 guys. No one pulls a weapon, right? But that's the idea, is like, let's pay homage to that tough guy action hero modality.
And the movie is called Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece, with actor and producer Sean Stone. Sean, you know, you've been a part of so many cool movies too through the years. The Doors, of course, you played the young Jim Morrison, which your dad did. What did you realize all of a sudden you're like thrust into these major, what was it like growing up, you know, in all these incredible films? That JFK?
Yeah. Well, The Doors, my mom told me, your dad's working on a movie about The Doors. I'm like, that's bizarre. Who wants to make movies about doors?
How old were you at the time?
I was like six, I think. I was like five going on six. And so I ended up, you know, I'm playing this character. And years later in high school, there's some credibility to it when your friends start seeing the Doors and like, oh, you're young Jim Morrison. And, you know,
they're like, how cool is
that's
that?
That's so cool. You know? And exactly when the girls start liking, you know, the Doors music in high school and college, then it's a credit. But when I was a kid, I was just like, this is bizarre. You know, didn't have any connection to it. JFK much more so. I loved JFK even when I was 7 years old. I was actually, you know, watching it for the first time on a big screen, 3 hour long movie. I never left the seat. I was mesmerized by it. And I think that's, again, I love history, and I ended up studying history at college, so I think the seed was planted at that time.
Now, question, because you grew up mostly in L.A.
Yeah.
Your father, I remember seeing him in the streets of the Lower East Side. He had an apartment and a tenement just two blocks away from where I was, Avenue A, St. Mark's. I noticed a lot of the directors, the creative types of the baby boomers, they based a lot of what they created from their New York experience.
Yeah.
This new generation of filmmakers, though, many of them are Cali, born and raised in California. Do you see the difference in terms of the scope and the direction that films go because California is so different than New York?
It's also, you know, the new generation. I mean, look, there's a lot of talented filmmakers, but there's just so much of a focus on CGI, computers, visual effects, art. You know, that's where it's at, right? The graphics. And there's less of an emphasis, I think, on story. And I think what you get from the New York guys, yeah, is that when you're in New York, you get inspired, right? You walk around, you look at the people, the flavors, the clothing, the hair, like everyone is just doing their own thing. There's an authenticity to it. And we kind of lost that, I think, as a culture because it became an Instagram culture, right? And it became like following the patterns and dressing like Kim Kardashian tells, you know, shows you how to dress and how to wear your hair. And I think we need to get back to that authenticity of, hey, you know what, just be yourself, do you, you know, mix it up. Don't go with the conformity of the culture. I think Hollywood creates that mentality a little bit. It's a bit more corporate, whereas New York was always the antithesis of it, even though you have Wall Street and you have, you know, high power rollers. But really the culture was more, you know, it was cropping up organically in the different neighborhoods. Right, from the Village to the Bronx to Harlem, everything in between.
And everybody, we're talking to Sean Stone here live in the studio with Curtis and Cosby. So thrilled that you're with us, Sean. You wrote this film, too, sort of to Curtis's point. Curtis and I both want to know, what were you on? Curtis is into medical marijuana, so he wants to know, were you on marijuana or something else? Because it is the wildest premise.
My dad is the biggest stoner in the world, and I really don't even get off on marijuana because it puts me to sleep. So I don't need drugs. I basically am just, I go into trances. I think that's what happened. Was, like I said, I lived in New York and I experienced this stuff. And you may think this is crazy, but I've met these characters. And I guarantee you, if you've been in New York, you've met these characters.
I was going to say,
when you watch this movie, you're like, I know that guy.
It's true.
Is this sort of Tarantino-esque?
I think you could say it is Tarantino-esque. I think it's a little more funny, whereas, you know, Tarantino definitely has a great sense of humor, great script writer. I don't ever want to compare myself to anyone else, but I do think this has that flavor of paying homage to the movies, whereas I think the only difference is Sonny Chiba movies were probably the biggest inspiration for us, where you have the action hero, but you also have this ridiculous sense of humor. But we were drawing less on movies and more on like the actual experience.
Now, many have said when your father traveled to Cuba to do that long interview with Fidel Castro that he was paying homage to Fidel Castro and not really approaching it maybe the way a journalist would. You actually sat through those interviews.
Yeah, and stayed awake for 6 hours.
What were your recollections of Castro?
Castro is a fascinating, I mean, you understand his charm, his charisma. He does have that movie star quality, right? You understand how he could put people under his spell and be very charismatic. I think, at the end of the day, I think that Castro basically, as a revolutionary, came in with a tremendous ideal. He basically wanted to reform and change things, ran into the realization of, you know, how politics really works, how you have to play this Cold War hand. I think that there is something to be said for the fact that Nixon, the U.S., kind of did isolate him because he wasn't going to give Coca-Cola back their land and he wasn't going to play with the mob elements and the casinos and stuff. So basically he turned to the Soviets and he probably got, you know, tougher. And yeah, I mean, there was definitely abuses of power, and I don't think it was an ideal situation, but I think that there was something that was inspiring about Castro, and you could still feel it when I met the man. And
yeah,
I think there was an idealism that is genuine, and I think that's what my father was really most admired about him, was the idealism, even though it's corrupted, even though I don't think it works, obviously, but you know, I get why he's one of the most important figures of the 20th century. And so my father looked at it more as a dramatist, saying, look, I want to know who this guy is. I don't need to go there as a journalist and criticize him. I need to understand who is he? What was, you know, what are his ideas, his thoughts? What is he in love with? What movies does he like? I mean, just understanding him as a person, I think that has value as an historical record, just as much as anything that goes as a critical piece to, you know, assess his regime and how it went wrong and what was, you know, what were the positives. Obviously, we do see things like medical, you know, the medical profession is very good. Even the prostitutes in Cuba are educated. I mean, there is that aspect of Cuba we have to admire, too.
Well, and you know what's interesting, Cuba, because Curtis and I were there over in Cuba. It's so fascinating. And, of course, just in the last few days, the regime changed. I mean, it's amazing. It's the first time there's not a Castro in power in Cuba. What are your thoughts to having been over there and having been one of the few people sort of sitting in front of him? I got stuck in an elevator with Castro, too, which is an interesting story.
No, I would love to see Cuba basically, you know, obviously opening up to capitalism. At the same time, there is something that is the authentic spirit of the Cuban people. I mean, look at Puerto Rico. Here's a country that is supposed to be part of the United States and is being completely abandoned by us. You look at the minimum wage, the amount of people that the earnings people are making, it would be the poorest state in the country if it was a state. And it's not getting the support and the help that it deserves after this hurricane. And, you know, you say, as bad as Cuba is, I mean, look at what we're doing to Puerto Rico, and that's our colony in a sense. So we can't, you know, I can't expect that if we get into Cuba and all of a sudden the Walmarts and other corporations come and take it over, it's going to necessarily benefit all the Cuban people.
But now, do you think it could change it, though? Do you think it could if we sort of have – there's been even Republicans are –
No, trade is positive. I'm just saying I'm opposed to the mass corporate takeovers like with Puerto Rico where you actually – the U.S. controls the shipping basically, right? So they can't ship from abroad. It has to be done through U.S. shipping and it raises the prices and Walmart has a huge presence in Puerto Rico. And again, the people are living poor in way too much poverty compared to what it should be.
Over the weekend, Shania Twain said she would have voted for Donald Trump. She got so much blowback that she was on her knees apologizing profusely. Do you find that there are pockets or elements in the cultural community who really are supportive of Donald Trump but don't want to say it publicly because there is such blowback?
Oh, 100%, 100%. And that's why I always kind of say, look, I don't – you know, I'm like you said earlier, I didn't vote for either one. I'm rooting for Trump. Because
by the way,
I think there
I'm the opposite, and I'm not saying who I voted for.
Right.
I have never told anybody, even my significant other, I've never told anybody who I have voted for in my entire life.
Well, it's, you know,
I go to my grave.
As a woman, it's probably even more dangerous if you didn't vote for Hillary.
I'm not saying who I voted for. You never know.
Yeah, but I'm rooting for Trump is the point, and I want him to basically defeat the deep state elements that are looking to create perpetual war, be it with Russia, you know, create conflict in Syria. I mean, there is this entrenched neocon element that we've seen since Bush, you know, that is kind of – it's out of control with the foreign policy. And I rooted for Trump saying, look, America should stay out of other people's business. We don't need to go around, you know, doing regime change. We need to mind our own affairs. Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the guy who promised to build infrastructure and focus on that. I did a documentary called A Century of War, which I released online and through RT, and we focus on the fact that, look, we used to be the industrial hub of the world, and since the 70s, the real wages have gone down, our industrial productivity has gone down. It's insane. We're paying people on, you know, food stamps to buy food from China. Doesn't make sense. We got agricultural land going to waste here.
You know, you have this new great film out that's coming out very soon, Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece. But you're also very involved in a lot of heavy topics and interesting topics. You're very passionate about what's been going on in Syria. And you feel like maybe we shouldn't have done those strikes, right? What are your thoughts on the situation there?
Oh, it's deeper than the strikes. I mean, the strikes were basically, I felt, Trump having to play the reactive card that we're expected to take. But more interesting is just how every time Trump tries to say, look, we don't need to be there, we should get our troops out, the week after, they say a chemical attack occurs.
So what do you think? Now, Curtis surmises, we've talked about this, he thinks the rebels may have set that up to keep U.S. engagement.
Sure,
you
sure.
believe that, too?
Oh, sure. But it goes back to the beginning. I mean, to the first allegations of Assad using chemical weapons, it's always been very murky and not proven. And yet the mainstream media jumps on this idea Assad is gassing his own people. Why is he not using the gas on ISIS and the rebel groups? I mean, it's very absurd, these situations. I think going back to 2012, 2013, I said from the beginning, this is the wrong war. What we're doing is exactly what happened in Libya. We're supporting terrorists to overthrow a sovereign secular government and actually creating more terrorism and chaos in the region.
So, Sean Stone, your brand new movie, what's the name of it again?
Fury of the Fist, like the opposite of Fist of Fury. Right. Remember the Bruce Lee movie?
Exactly.
Yeah, so and the Golden Fleece.
How is it that Curtis Sliwa didn't make the final cut here? What did I end up on the cutting room floor? Whoa. What,
gotta,
am I a person of no consequence?
I tell you what, you're going to get you in the sequel.
Oh, the sequel? Okay.
You know?
Most of those guys I can knock out. Not all of them.
Right?
Most of them.
Well, we got Goldberg in there. We got
Van Damme.
Victor Ortiz. Yep. Well, Van Damme's daughter, not Jean-Claude.
No, but still, I'm saying in the jeans. Him,
and she's pretty good. She's got a helicopter kick you got to watch out for.
Well, so, I'm not going to hit any women. I'm not hitting any women.
Although he's been tempted with me. By the way, everybody, the movie is coming out in May. Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece. It is so funny. I've gotten a sneak peek. I love it. I'm so proud of you. Tune in May. Sean Stone, great to have you on so many great topics.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.